Just how pervasive is bullying in the land of the free and the home of the brave? And did you know that according to the Center for Disease Control, suicide is the third leading cause of death among young people, resulting in 4,400 deaths per year? And what does any of this have to do with the environment and Mrs. Green's world? Please stay with me and find out. This is going to be a very powerful and relevant show, and I'm going to tie it all together for all of us. Welcome, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and we are getting down to earth with Mrs. Green. Thank you for joining us, and as always, for being a part of our world. Before we get into the show, I would like very much to thank the sponsor of the show because they make it possible to cover such important and timely issues as this, so pervasive in our society. And the sponsor for this show is Sievert Franks Architects. For over 30 years, Sievert Franks Architects has demonstrated their commitment to innovative and timeless design solutions, regionally responsive architecture, and adaptability to the needs and challenges of each individual's project and client. And I want to highlight that because what that means is they are regionally responsible and they don't pull up cacti, they don't cut down saguaros, they look at the water needs, so they are very environmentally conscious and sensitive to things like temperature, weather conditions, and water supplies. In other words, they care. We appreciate their support and the great work they do. So now please join me in welcoming our guests for the next 30 minutes. And before I do that, one more little thing. Speaking of caring, is a tip from Tucson Electric Power. And it's not only a good one, but one that can help keep us cooler and save us all money. So to keep our home cooler in the summer, use ceiling or oscillating fans with blades operating in the counterclockwise position to keep the air circulating. You have to remember to turn the direction of those fans around. The moving air will make you feel cooler without having to lower your thermostat. And I know that utility bills are a big deal in the summer for people. I know they are for me. So get those fans turned around and stay cooler. So now please join me in welcoming someone who saw a problem, a big pervasive societal problem, and decided to do something about it. His name is Carlos Flores. Carlos is the founder of an organization called BRAG in Yuma, Arizona, and BRAG stands for Bully Rehab Awareness Gym. And I just have to love that. I don't know how you came up with that, Carlos, but I love it. And they are dedicated to help curb the growing epidemic of bullying within their community through the power of empowerment, focusing on helping children and adults one person at a time. Carlos, it really is wonderful to have you here, and I can't wait for you to share your story and tell us all about BRAG.
Thank you for having me.
So the best place to start, I think, is your background. I watched the Mike Rowe video, which was how we found out about it in the first place, and he's doing this wonderful show. I think, isn't it called Return the Favor?
Returning the favor.
And you talked about how you were bullied and you became a bully. So just give us a little bit of background about how this life experiences got you to where you are today.
Growing up in a small town, you know, you find yourself, we all at one point or another in our lives, we deal with bullying. Some of us brush it off and continue in life, and some of us it affects us deeply, depending on you know, our situation. Of course, I grew up in the small town of Yuma, Arizona, and my father was a retired probe officer, and he'd always teach me as a kid how to defend myself in boxing, but I didn't have that aggressive gene,
right?
Or I just didn't care about boxing, I would say, right? And so I didn't really care much about learning about boxing. I was more into learning about bugs outside or something completely opposite.
Right, right.
And so I would get the bus every day that I had to go and get the bus to go to school. I would just I'd always get pushed around and made fun of. And I mean, it was just, every day was something new. And I never said anything. I just left it at that. And just, hopefully if I ignore them, they'll go away. And it would just keep on and keep on and keep on. And I never brought it up to my parents. So one day I was just sitting on the bus, and I just happened to pick a seat, and I got punched from behind. And it actually caused damage to my jaw. I had a hairline fracture on my, fracture on my jaw. And I went to school. Still, I went to school with a lot of pain, and the nurse ended up having to send me home because I was in so much pain. And my father picked me up, and he says, "What happened? What's going on?" And at this point, you know, there's no, I can't really lie about it. I can't say anything. So I was scared. I was scared, truly scared to tell him that I had been getting bullied and pushed around and thrown on the ground, throw my books on the ground. I was afraid because he's such a strong, tough man.
Right.
That I felt that, you know, he was going to be mad at me because I didn't defend myself, because he taught me how to defend myself. And I told him what happened, and I never in my what I was thinking, it didn't happen. My dad just put his head down and hugged me, and he says, "Mijo, why would you never tell me that this was going on? You know, I could try to do something to help you." And I never imagined that my father was going to be okay with that. You know, I thought he was just going to be mad at me and say, "Why didn't you fight back?" And from that day on, you know, life changed for myself. He never let me ride the bus again. And, you know, being a really tough man and not letting me ride the bus was one of those things that I felt he really, truly cared about me.
Right.
And he knew that I didn't want to be tough. I didn't want to be a fighter. I didn't want to be what he wanted me to become. And I understood what he wanted from me, but I just couldn't be it. I just said, this wasn't me. And it was till years later that, you know, the bullying still continued. People still pushed me around. It wasn't as bad as it was, you know, when I got the bus every day. When I got into wrestling, and I got into wrestling for whatever reason. I was watching these guys pick up these guys and throw them up, you know, and drop them on the ground.
Right.
I go, this is a really cool thing. So I kind of like that. And I remember going home, and I told my dad, "Dad, I found something that I could defend myself with." And he looks at me and he goes, "What's that, Mijo?" "Wrestling." And he goes, No.
No. You're
kidding.
You will
not do wrestling. Oh, no. You know, this man grew up in Puerto Rico in boxing. So for them, they have to protect themselves with their hands. So the last thing you want to do is fall on the ground. So he kept like completely 100% against it. He goes, you never go to the ground on a fight, son. You just don't do that.
And so were you crushed? Were you like crushed? Or finally, Dad, here it is. And he goes, "No, you're not doing that."
Here I thought, I was bringing a great idea to him.
Right.
And he was like, "No, you never go to the ground on a fight." So I just looked at him and I'm just like, "But Dad, but you want me to be tougher and I think this could help me." And he looked at me, he's like,
"No."
"Well, son," I said, if you believe that that's going to help you, you know, so
he's going to support you. Yeah. What a good dad.
And I mean, he's a destroyed man. You know, here's a guy that has done boxing all his life. And he's like, his son wants to, he says, "Why would you want to wrestle around with another man? You know, like, why don't you, it's so much easier to just, you know, punch him, get him off you." And he just didn't understand why you needed to tangle up with somebody.
Right, right.
So, you know, so I got into wrestling, and it was a really, it was a great experience for me. It helped me become so strong and so powerful. And I just got so much confidence from wrestling. But it did create a little bit of a problem for me, because once I started getting that confidence level, and once you kind of, you start walking around with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, because you have been pushed around so long. You have been made fun of. You have been pushed and punched and beaten, that now when you learn something, a skill that's so useful for you at your fingertips, basically, you have this tool to protect yourself. You kind of want to use it, you know? So, I was bitter. I was angry with the kids that used to push me around and beat me. So if I go back and look at my little, I used to have a little journal that they give you, you know, and if I could, you know, look back at my journal, I haven't been able to find it. One of these days I'm going to look for it. I would write down, I can't wait to the day that I find every single kid that beat me up, and I want to pick them up and slam them on their head. That was the mentality that I had now.
I get it.
Yeah.
I think that is the most innate human quality, because it's survival. I mean, I get it. And they make lots of movies about that, where they go and they track down everyone, like Wolverine. They go and they get anybody that hurt them. And it is our basic human instinct. So I so get it. So did you become somewhat of a bully yourself?
I did. Like I said, I walked around with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. I got strong. And in my mind, all I wanted to do was find every single one of these kids and go slam them on their head.
Yeah.
You know, because I still couldn't punch them. You know, I didn't have the anger.
But I could throw them to the ground.
But I could pick them up and throw them, like I said, potatoes to the ground. Well, once I got this confidence level, I remember getting in trouble once because I, you know, it was one of my ex-bullies, and I grabbed them, threw them around, and I got in trouble. My dad was called, and we got home, and he sits me down. He goes, "What's going on?" And I said, "Dad, well, I'm mad." He goes, "What are you mad at?" "I'm mad at every single person that hurt me.
I'm mad
at every person that talked, you know, told me names, had made fun of me. They would make fun of me because of our business. You know, we have a small tortilla factory here in Yuma, Arizona, and they used to call me Doughboy or Tortilla Boy, you know, and now I look back and I'm like, yeah, I am. I am a tortilla boy, you know, I am the man.
Yeah, but that only comes with maturity and adulthood,
maturity,
and they were just being rotten.
Yeah, and I just didn't know, so I was angry and I was mad, and I told them, I was like, I'm mad, Dad, and I want to hurt every single kid that has hurt me. And he looks at me and goes, "Son, I didn't raise you to be that way. You know, when I was teaching you how to box, it was to defend yourself. But if somebody was to ever attack you, that you would have a tool to defend yourself.
Right.
It wasn't for you to go and look for people and beat them up, because that makes you no different than they are to you." And I just sat there and I'm looking at my dad going, I just don't understand here. You know, this guy wants me to become tough. But now he's telling me that I have to not use this tool to protect myself. So it took some time for me to understand it. But, I mean, from that day on, when situations would pop up on me again, I was able to control the situation and say, you know what, I don't need to grab this guy and slam him on the ground. I just know that I can protect myself if I need to. And I just brush it off, walk away. Always keep myself, you know, paying attention that, you know, I don't get attacked. But I don't have to use this tool unless I truly need to. And that just, it stayed with me. It stayed with me for years. And I'm not going to say that, you know, I wasn't the mean kid for only a couple weeks. No, I turned into the bully for a little while. You know, I'd walk around, like I said, with a chip on my shoulder. So it took time for me to leave that anger and be okay with the pain that I had taken as a kid, being pushed around and made fun of.
But, you know, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
But what it screams to me is, first of all, what an incredible influence your dad had on you. So it speaks volumes about good parenting. I mean, he was your rock. He was your go-to guy. You respected him so much, and he was there for you. You helped him grow in some ways because of wrestling, but he helped you, and he was your touchstone you could go back to. And what blows me away is this shows the damage that bullying does, the scars. It festers inside. How could it not? I have one tiny little incident from when I was in sixth grade that happened to me. I'm 67 years old, and I still remember that incident. It was one time, and I cried and cried and cried. So it's there. But then what I think is so magnificent and miraculous is when you grew up, and then it comes to brag. You get to have the experience of what it's like to have been bullied and to be the bully. So to me, that's the miracle in this story, because you went on to use all this to make a difference.
Yes, and I mean, it exactly. One of the biggest things is one of the biggest things that we come across is, you know, it does start with parents, and it's really tough. It's really tough now. When I was a kid, my parents worked a lot. They did. They worked a lot, but there was a lot of family time.
Right.
There was always time to sit down and have family time. No matter how hard they worked, we always sat down. We always had dinner together. We always went out to do special things together.
Right. Matters so much.
So, and nowadays we have, you know, our social media, our phones. We're so busy stuck on our phones, and I mean, you have a full-time job, and then you want to catch up on your Facebook or Instagram, and, you know, I think we lose a little bit of sight of our children, you know, and like you said, if it wasn't for my father being there for me in everything that I was going through, I don't know how I would have coped with everything that was going on, you know, and a lot of these kids that I help, a lot of them have problems. You know, there's a lot of divorce, and maybe the dad's not in their life. Maybe the mom's not in their life. And, you know, a dad's maybe too lenient, you know, because he doesn't have the mom to help him out. So he kind of lets his kids do whatever he wants, or the mom's not strong enough to scream at their kid and tell them to do the right thing. So it's a little bit of both, but there's always also the great parents that don't even know that something's
right.
going on.
Because they don't. The kids don't want to say. That's a good point.
They'll never speak. You know. So I mean, it could be voiced that it's you know parenting to help you out and be there, but at the same time, there's kids. I mean, if that would have never happened to me, I probably would have never told my father.
Right. Right. So that was
a miracle. I have great parents. Yeah, I have great parents. So we see that a lot, and we see it a lot. I see parents come to us, and I mean beautiful parents, beautiful families, and their kid is just destroyed. And it's by a coincidence that they found out that their child was getting beat up, or it's by coincidence that they find out that their child is the bully.
Yeah, yep, both ends. And some parents intervene and some don't. We talk about that on our team all the time, because a lot of my team members have young kids, and how important it is once you know about it, that you are in the school, that you are talking to the school bus driver, that you are doing what you can to be a part of it, because it's our job to take care of our kids. We just have to know there's a problem going on. You know, I want to just share a little bit of statistics. You have a great website that's very clear on the federally collected data so that people get a sense. The numbers blew my mind. In some ways they were smaller and in some ways they were bigger, but 28% of kids from 6th to 12th grade experienced bullying. 28%, that's almost a third. 20% of students grade 9 through 12 experienced it. Bullied others. Approximately 30% of young people admitted that they are bullying. So who knows what that number is like. 70% of kids say they have seen it. 70.4% school staff have seen bullying. 62% of those staff witnessed bullying two or more times in the last month when the survey was done. And 40% said they witnessed bullying a week or more. And of course, I want to ask, what do they do? But this is the one that jumped out at me. When bystanders intervene, bullying stops within 10 seconds, 57% of the time. So if you're wondering, I mean, I want to read that again. When bystanders intervene, bullying stops within 10 seconds, 57% of the time. So if you see it happening, you can go up and start it. And then we talked about cyberbullying. You mentioned social media. 6% of students in grade 6 through 12 experienced cyberbullying, and 16% of high school students were electronically bullied in the last year. And then you go to the LGBT community, and it's 52%. And, you know, I think it's very timely about this show because the recent suicides of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, people are finally paying attention and starting to realize how bad things are in many cases. And a lot of these kids who killed themselves, it was from cyberbullying. They leave messages and say, I couldn't do it anymore. So it's, I thought this show was so timely to say to people, be aware, get your, you know, heighten your sensitivity to what might be going on around you and with your kids. But I want you to talk about how you are helping kids on both ends of the bullying spectrum. Tell us about your approach and the kind of programs you offered, because you and I will talk about the whole concept so big. I want people to know what you actually do.
Well, see, it's people ask me all the time, how do you do what you do? You know, how do you get kids to do what you do? And I'm like, look, man, there's no secret to what we do. It's called love and compassion.
That's love it.
First and foremost, you must have love and compassion for anything that we do in life, period. So for me, is I knew what happened to me, and I know that there's thousands and thousands of other stories that are 10 times even worse than my story. And so what I wanted to do when I retired from MMA, you know, I always had this idea. When I first started MMA, I was like, man, I can't wait to someday own a gym and train world-class fighters. That was my dream, world-class fighters.
Wow.
What I wanted to train. I mean, I wanted to you know, look out and go, yeah, I'm going to be making fighters all over the world. And then where I grew up, it was where I actually started my little gym. And kids would walk by down the street, and I'd take them off the street and bring them in here and say, hey, how would you like, you know, learn this sport? And it arises from that area.
Wow.
That I grew up in. We've seen the kids, you know, you see them out in the streets, you see them doing things that they shouldn't be doing, you know? And so I just thought, man, what if I bring this kid in and help him out? And it started from that. You know, and then my first student was a close friend of mine. They brought their little kid in, their child, and they said, my son needs help. He's, you know, he had these situations happen in his life, and he doesn't want to speak to anybody. So we brought him in, and just from giving him love and compassion and showing him our beautiful art of martial arts that we have, it just changed him into a different human being. And I mean, the empowerment that we gave him was beautiful, but at the same time, I wanted to make sure, because I remember myself, he's going to become tough. He's going to learn everything. He's going to be able to defend himself, but he has to learn that he can't use this out in the street just because he knows it.
Right, right. Because it's a weapon. It's a weapon.
And that's what I instilled in him. And it's just something snapped. I mean, I was sitting there and I'm like, wow, we truly transformed this child from a scared child that didn't want to talk to nobody to a strong, energetic, you know, smiling, happy kid.
Yeah, confidence.
And I said, oh, there's something here. You know, there's something here. And I changed my whole outlook in life and said, you know what? Maybe I don't want to train world-class fighters. You know, maybe what I want to do is I want to help kids that were once like me. And that's what we do. So what I do is when we have our gym now, we have a beautiful staff of coaches that are all volunteer-based. We're all volunteer-based.
You're kidding.
they believed in a dream that I had. And it's hard to tell somebody, hey, why don't you coach for, 2 to 3 hours here for free and help kids to have trouble. Not a lot of people be like, oh, yeah, man.
Yeah, where do I sign up? Because I don't have anything else to do.
Yeah, sounds like fun. But most of the guys that are being trained, that are trainers at my gym are people that I help myself. And they're actually adults that went through a lot of trouble in their life. And I helped them through martial arts. And their way of giving back is because martial arts gave back to them. So it's a pretty beautiful thing when you think we started with kids, yet I've helped so many adults that now they said, you know what, we want to help you out and help you with the kids.
And so what a perfect thing. It's they're returning the favor. It's like it really fits. Yes. They are perfectly turning around and saying, someone gave to me and now I'm going to give back. I'm going to return the favor. What a story. I mean, seriously. So we're actually going to run out of time in about 5 minutes. It's like, I can't stand it. But
I know. It's not much time.
It's not much time. We have 3 minutes. But if you can, in 2 minutes or less, I don't think so, tell us how returning the favor changed things for the gym and you and the people, if it did. And then if you have time, I'd love to tell us how you got your building. Someone responded. That made me cry when I watched that, about someone giving you a building. So quickly tell us that, and people will have to go and watch the Mike Rowe video and listen to my podcast so they learn about this national model that could be put into communities all over the country. So tell us about what happened with Mike Rowe and returning the favor.
Returning the favor, coming to Yuma, Arizona, was one of the biggest impacts we have ever had in our place, because we didn't exist. And it's thanks to Mike Rowe, returning the favor, that they make us small little people that are trying to make a difference in the world, that they make us known. And I'm truly thankful from the bottom of my heart for them coming here and doing what they did. They donated a obstacle course rig for our children. They donated gloves. They donated a portico. I mean, they gave us tools to continue doing what we love to do. And I'm just truly grateful for what they do.
So awesome. I mean, it is so awesome.
I mean, they go all over the nation. I mean, they help so many small, what they call them is do-gooders. And it's just one of those remarkable things. It's amazing. So yes, they helped us 1,000%. I mean, to get the word out there, they did. That we have people knocking on our doors every day.
And they just, and that video has almost 7 million views. So the message of what you're doing can raise people's awareness and inspire them to act, and maybe get parents to pay a little bit more attention, and teachers, educators. So it's what I call the ultimate ripple effect. It's a big wave. And then you had to close the gym. This was earlier on, I think, if I got that right. And then
I lost the facility that we were in, to whatever circumstances it was. And, the man, Frank Carrillo, reached out to us, an amazing man. He gave us a home. He gave us a place. He believed in us. He believed in our mission. And I had very short time with him because he passed away November of this year. And it was a rough loss for us, because he truly believed in what we were doing. And he knew, and he told me, he says, Carlos, you are going to change so many children's lives, and this is why I'm doing this for you, because I believe in what you're doing. And I wish he could be here today so he could see you know, the episode from Returning the Favor.
I know. Oh my gosh! Just, bad timing.
It's one of those things that you just. I thank him, and I'll always thank him for the rest of my life. And I know he's looking down.
Exactly. He lives on in all of it. He lives
on. One of the craziest and most beautiful things was my son was born on the same date.
You're kidding.
That he passed. Yes. And it's also my father's birthday.
Oh, my gosh. So you could imagine.
No, it was one of the hardest things to deal with, but at the same time, I say he gave me a gift. So, you know, my son was born on the same date that he passed. And it's also my father's birthday. So
that's unreal. That's one of those things that you hear and you say, you can't make that up. That is like, that was so on purpose. And I just, you know, we are actually over time. And I just asked my engineer to cut the end of the show so we could go a little longer. But I love that you care so deeply about your parents, that you're working to help them with their retirement. I love that you stepped up for kids and that will be a model. The people that help you, I send my biggest respect for them. I hope that this helps with our national epidemic of bullying and kids killing themselves. And my final note is, Mrs. Green's World is all about putting a spotlight on the social justice aspect of sustainability. You cannot have a sustainable planet without a socially just one, which is why we wanted to interview Carlos, because he's all about social justice. And I want to personally thank you, Carlos, and all of your team for making a difference for all the kids whose lives you touch and moving our world in a socially just one. This has been delightful. And I will stop by the restaurant if we go out to California that way. I count on it, and I'll let you know because I have your cell phone number now.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. And our July 10th show is Dr. Robin Cloth and Dr. Nissan Marietta, and they are going to be talking about the opioid crisis, an in-depth look. So, Carlos, thank you. Please spread the good word. And everybody, look out for bullying out there. You can make a difference. Thanks for being a part of my world.